Yeah. Something designed to make your spine whine one time. With DJ Honda, this is how we represent. You know what I'm saying? We gonna bash you in the head with something real, real nice. Y'all hold on. Here we go. Check it out. And you don't stop.
What up? Hip hop is at the frail of bridge. From New York straight talk to the Tokyo shit. Yeah. What up? Hip hop is at the frail of bridge. From New York straight talk to the Tokyo
shit. With DJ
shit.
Honda.
Hip hop is at the frail of bridge. From New York straight talk to the Tokyo shit. What up? Hip hop is at the frail of bridge. From New York straight talk to the Tokyo shit.
Come on, come on, come on, come on, baby.
Walk in New York with the big stick loaded. Most voted for the Daily Tabloid from Tokyo to Roppongi Square. I'll be there, and as the plan unfurls, I freak the geisha girl. So that X, I'm on New York, then the yellow cabs. I move your pectoral muscle worn down to your abs. My man Honda, not the car, but the DJ. Attack the pans and move fast with your hands. Up in the wild lands and walk across the burning sands. Can I have a little more sake in my cup? Yo, Honda, I'm kind of fond of these Japanese women. They treat me like a king and scream my name out loud. There's room for one more.
All right, Mood of Scale, it feels like it's been so long since the last one, though. My friend technologically over here spread it out correctly. This is the 36th chamber here, Mood of Scale. I would be better have my donuts with my man Bad News Ramen here. And how you been? How was the trip?
It's good.
It's good? Oh, yeah. Oh, you're happy now.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're on the phone talking about, you know, piddling around with soccer balls and... I'll bring the soccer balls and say, shut up, dude. When you enter my house and you're like hounding me for like the past 5 days to do Mood of Scale, you finally show up, you know, because I say, you know, you can, and then you're over here on the phone for fucking 10 fucking minutes, dude. I don't got time for that. My time is very valuable. Yeah, you know, I got 290 Twitter followers, man. What do you have, you know? People want to know.
I definitely broke the 40 barrier.
There you go.
I think
job.
I might even have broken over 50.
and then the hose left.
No.
The hose we noticed.
There's still a couple in there.
All right, so you said that you're all loaded up and you're ready to go and you're burning and itching to have like a coterie of topics you want to talk about.
Yeah.
So get to it. Or are you still worried about, you know, whether you brought the soccer player cards or whatever it is?
There was a lot of stuff there, man.
Well, yeah.
I wasn't just talking to some geek off the street. I'm actually friends with that guy.
Oh, you're talking to the head coach. Oh, hey.
No, he's...
I don't care.
Yeah. He can't be any geek off the street, if you know what I mean. Yeah, all right. So, just kind of summing up, it's been, like I said, I think like 2 weeks since we actually have recorded one. My man took the family on vacation. But been watching and been enjoying what I've been seeing from Raw and SmackDown. And actually, even a little bit, if we had time, I was going to kind of talk about TNA for a little bit. It was kind of funny because the wrestling was really good. And then it kind of looked like they were gaining some momentum. And then they had a shitty-ass show last week.
Yeah, and then Kurt Angle left too, right?
No, Kurt Angle...
And he's in rehab, so he left. Yeah.
Well, it's being that TNA, like, pre-records, like, 2 weeks in advance...
Oh, he was still there?
Well, that happened after the whatever show, but it wasn't that show. Never mind. It's too convoluted. But no, they have this... I think we talked about it a few weeks ago, the Bound for Glory series.
Yeah.
And it's been really good, the matches in it. I don't know if you know... Bully Ray lost the title to Sabin.
Yeah.
Which, you know...
I think that's the first TNA I've watched for like...
Oh, you watched that match?
I watched 5 minutes of it and realized that Chris Sabin was pretty much garbage, so I turned it off.
No love for Sabin?
Did I keep the channel on? So, I thought Bully Ray was good from what I saw, but it just didn't pique my interest.
It didn't speak to you?
It didn't speak to me, no.
Yeah. I think Sabin... I think he's a good wrestler. It's clearly, like, I mean,
well,
his thing is he's got no...
Wade Barrett's a good wrestler. I mean...
Yeah, no, well, that's the thing with TNA, though, is, like, I mean, they got a lot of guys that can really work. They have a lot of guys that really can't talk. And Sabin's kind of one of those guys. But at the same time, I don't have a problem with him getting some run because he's a good worker. There's a lot of good workers over there.
Is there a point to talking about TNA? It's good. And you've been enjoying it.
Until
today.
until
the bad show.
Well, it wasn't even that the show was bad. They had, like, this build-up to this new guy that they're bringing in.
Was it Chronic?
It was Tito Ortiz, dude.
Tito Ortiz, the former fighter?
Yeah.
No, that's great, yeah.
Absolutely cool. Terrible.
They're breaking new ground over there. Okay, so can we please stop talking about TNA? I mean, you're wasting my time over here. You're wasting me and my 290 Twitter followers.
All right, we'll go ahead and talk about what the 290 Twitter followers want to talk about.
You're the
about.
One that has a crumpled piece
yeah,
of paper.
Yeah, but I can whatever you want to talk
you,
about.
Here's the thing. You had this big old buildup. You said you had a lot of things on your mind. You're ready to talk. And the very first topic you bring up is TNA, dude. I mean, you failed there, dude.
I did.
Yeah, it's like a John Cena promo, you know? It's like a John Cena main event. So what are you going to do about it? You're just going to sit there with that dumb look on your face? You're actually going to talk about something I want to talk about? Something I can speak my mind to? And here we go. And then there's the silence. Dude, you want to start over? We can start over. You want to start over real fast?
Nah.
Then let's go, dude. Come on. Come on.
I guess I don't have anything to talk about.
You're doing the whole show about TNA?
No.
This is a big letdown.
Yeah. All my momentum has been... Has ended. So
what are you going to do about it?
I'm going to pout.
Be somebody, dude. You can't pout on a podcast.
Damn it. All right, fine.
You got to be professional, dude.
Fine, all right. I really liked that the Shield did good yesterday, John. No, I can just go straight into that. There was a lot of good stuff on the recent Raw, which is the one we saw yesterday. Shield ended up in a pretty good match, which... had like a, I don't know what the hell kind of ending that was, a disqualification because somebody broke up submission. So I thought that was kind of, that kind of pissed me off because you had a good match going. And
But they can break up a pin, but you can't break up a submission. You can break a pin, but submission, that fetches out a line.
Apparently they drew the line yesterday.
Yeah,
So I don't know what it was. They're running out of time or something. I thought the match was great. I thought Orton was really good on his two appearances through the show. I think he's been really coming through recently, and we kind of been talking about that. Cena completely bombed on another promo. I thought it was really bad.
I did the first minute of it, and then I was like, okay, there's nothing for me to watch here, so I fast-forwarded it.
You're missing the train wreck aspect of it.
I've already seen the train wreck. I mean, I don't want to see it again. It's kind of like this podcast right here. I mean, it's like I want to get past the train wreck, so let's go. So don't John Cena, let's go. I'm just going to get a bad time. I'm sorry, man. Here's the thing with the Shield.
Yes,
and,
please.
And with them. So you're waiting for me to carry the show like I usually do. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. After all this big talk, after all this big man talk over here, and now it's resorting to back to what it was before. The thing with the Shield, with them losing... I when you brought up that they lost because of the disqualification for the Yes Lock, I really didn't care about the outcome as much because just the way that they're building up SummerSlam, they're building the whole John Cena and Daniel Bryan angle. And here's the kind of the funny thing. Let me finish first. Like I really didn't. I knew that the Shield wasn't going to win, so that really didn't bother me. I was kind of watching the match and kind of worried about, like, well, the Shield isn't being utilized like they were in the past, where they're kind of this big old group of people that, you know, every week in and week out win, and there's kind of, with their trail of trying to do, on their path to justice, there's a lot of injustice happening to the top people. And I kind of liked it towards the end where I thought it played really well off with Randy Orton giving the RKO to Daniel Bryan. He gave the RKO to the deer in the headlights, John Cena, who, for some reason, everybody knows that Randy's going to give him the RKO, but for like 2 seconds, John Cena actually thought that they were friends and they were working towards a common cause, which they really haven't had to do because the Shield hasn't been involved with John Cena at all. So there's no build-up to that in terms of the Shield is this overpowering thing that they have to gang up on and become friends with. And so he throws the RKO in, and so the... I like the drama of the Money in the Bank and going, okay, I don't think the title is going to change right here, but it can, and it draws my interest in. It's like, okay, this is kind of a good ending. If I have to watch a John Cena match as the main event, at least there's that 5-minute drama where you don't know if Randy is going to cash in the Money in the Bank. And then I like how the Shield comes out again and they kind of establish themselves again. There's a lot of people on Twitter kind of talking like the Shield's kind of boring now, because they don't have any major feuds and they're not really doing anything. And you kind of, with them walking back down the ring to stop Randy Orton from cashing in, which doesn't make any sense, at least is you kind of remembered who they were, and I thought they were played the right way. The one question I do have with you, though, is you have this whole Daniel Bryan, John Cena angle, but that's all being pushed off to the side, and the story is really the McMahons and Daniel Bryan and how each one of them views them. And if John Cena is your top guy, supposedly is your top guy, but you can't really involve him in the build-up to SummerSlam because nobody really cares about him in the first place. They're doing a lot of things with John Cena to keep him as the top guy, but he can't carry promos. He can't carry any type of story-building build-up with what's going on with Daniel Bryan, and the focus is now on the McMahons. To me, it just really reeks of Ultimate Warrior and what they had to do with Ultimate Warrior's champion. And I see the parallels to it. I don't know how you feel about it, but how do you kind of...
just, like, hiding him, like, trying to hide him. Yeah, I mean, I hadn't really thought about it that way. I definitely hadn't thought about it as compared to, say, Ultimate Warrior. Yeah, I mean, it makes you kind of think that there's something like lying beneath the scenes, because it just you would think that they would involve John Cena more. It's kind of funny, like in some ways, like Cena has been more, almost being more of the heel in certain instances. Like even this promo yesterday, I know you fast forwarded through
it. Did he get booed during his promo like he always does, or what? And he's still the top babyface in the company?
Yeah. But basically he I think the main line was like something like you know, Daniel Bryan can talk about all these other places he's held these belts and stuff, but none of that means anything because it didn't happen in the WWE, which is it's obviously a shot at Daniel Bryan, but it's really a shot at anyone that's a fan of kind of real wrestling or watching guys build up and work their way, like all the guys that had to actually earn a spot to get to the WWE. And it's really I'm not saying that it was a heel promo at all, but that is really something that a heel would be more inclined to say, right? Like something you know, all the hard work that you put in, you know, that doesn't matter because, you know, even though I got spoon-fed my way to the top, like, I'm the man, and all the work you've done through all the countries you've been through to get here, that doesn't mean anything. I just thought it was kind of interesting because I think Daniel Bryan played, you know, he, as we said before, he can play a heel or a face really well. They're really going with him as kind of a likable guy right now, which kind of leaves it to be that John Cena has to be a little less likable maybe. I don't know, but
okay, listen, you've been watching wrestling since you were how old? 9 years old, 10,
something like
whatever
that.
It is.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a guy that you say that John Cena has been, you know, spoon fed everything? He's still being spoon fed. I'm looking at former champions who have been built up by the WWE, wrestlers and champions that people actually like, and I'm looking at a guy like the Ultimate Warrior, who at the time was liked by a lot of people. We didn't like him. I think you might have liked him a little bit, but I think you're kind of getting out of the whole wrestling scene during that time. But they had to do stuff like Papa Shango. They had to do a Papa Shango match where his black stuff comes out of his head and stuff out of Ultimate Warrior's head because Papa Shango has some type of magic, right? And you look at John Cena's title run so far, it's been marked by nothing. He has been the main event for every pay per view. Nobody cares about the main event. They care about every other match except for the main event, which really doesn't make any sense to me. And then if I'm going to compare this guy even further, I'm looking at one champion that I never really liked, and that was Bret Hart. I've never liked Bret Hart as a champion, or I don't like how people just revere Bret Hart, saying that he's one of the great champions of all time. A lot of that, to me, is really fueled by the machine known as WWE, which is kind of funny because WWE and Bret Hart weren't talking for a long time, but they built this guy up even during his title run. And the one thing that I can do say about Bret Hart that I respect was that he would put on a good match. Yeah. Bret Hart in the ring, you couldn't take away his ring work. And as much as I hated him as a champion, I knew that I would get, in some respects, a decent match wrestling-wise. Now, in terms of storytelling, I wasn't a fan of his either. I never liked his storytelling in terms of what he did in the ring, but I respected the guy because I knew the guy, as, say, a Daniel Bryan, went through the system and he worked his way, clawed his way to the top, and he became a main guy. We're looking at John Cena here, and it's like, why do you need to bring the McMahons in? I mean, the McMahons are a quick fix to any storyline. You can bring them in, and they can save it. And they're doing this with John Cena. When are they going to see the light with this guy? And when are they going to say, like, you know, this guy, nobody cares about John Cena anymore. Every other guy within that company, I believe people care more about. Now, you can show a fucking picture of some kid jumping up and down in his little John Cena gear and make me believe that people actually like this guy. But every fan that I know or someone that's watched wrestling for a long time care way more about the other people that he's facing. Randy Orton. I care more about Randy Orton than I do John Cena. Daniel Bryan. Why do I watch Raw? I watch Raw for CM Punk. I watch Raw for the Wyatt family. If they're so concerned about their ratings at the very end or certain type of segments here and there, why are you putting your supposedly main guy that nobody gives a fuck about in the main event at every flipping Raw or every pay-per-view? I just don't get it. I don't understand what it is. And to me, bringing the McMahons into the storyline where Daniel Bryan is outshining way more. Take a look at Daniel Bryan after he got fired and he came back. He was vanilla as vanilla can get. I mean, when Kevin Nash called Chris Benoit a vanilla midget, he was talking about Daniel Bryan. Mm-hmm. And look at over the span of one year, look what this guy has done to make everybody like him or make him interesting. John Cena's had, what, 10 years or whatever it is, and he's still the exact same fucking guy. And you've said this before, I just get sick and tired of all this stuff, and then bringing in Vince McMahon, bringing in Stephanie, bringing Triple H into this whole thing. Why do you have a champion that you need to do that with? And when are they going to see the light with this guy? I just don't understand why this guy's in the spot that he's in. And I haven't beaten this dead horse in a long time, but it's just the way it is. I just don't get it.
I mean, it's hard for me to respond to something like that because, like, we're pretty like-minded on that. If you're asking me to get in the head of the McMahons, why they do it this way, only thing I can say is, like, they make money off the guy, and that's, I mean,
But they're not making, I mean, they're not making money off the guy. They're making money off of different people within the company.
I think that they've made money off of him for a long time, and I think all the statistics that they set up to measure, like, the, you know, the ratings, the viewership and whatnot, they're always putting him in the spots that are the spots that get the highest viewing. So I think it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's
like, do you think that there was more viewers when John Cena was having his Superman title run where he was beating everybody? Do you think there was more viewers back then, or do you think more viewers came in when The Rock came back, or when Randy Orton was actually beating John Cena, or when CM Punk had his 434-day run? When do you think you had more viewers watching Raw? Because for me, I wasn't watching John Cena when he was having the Superman run. The second that CM Punk, they threw CM Punk a bone, he ran off with it. The second that The Rock came back, that's when I started watching.
Yeah. Now, I think when The Rock came back was when a lot of people jumped back on board, too. But then, now The Rock's gone, I think that they don't know anything else other than, well, we've made money with this guy. He's, in their eyes, is only, like, big name, highly marketable guy we got, and we're just gonna ride him into the ground. I mean, that
well, he's ridden into the ground because this match that's coming up at SummerSlam, first of all, it's not even the one match I want to see. I mean, what's the one match I want to see? I want to see CM Punk versus the Beast or whatever it is.
Wow,
that's the match. You telling me that's you don't want to see that match? You wouldn't buy SummerSlam for CM Punk versus Brock Lesnar?
I'm telling you that I'm surprised to hear you say that you want to watch a Brock Lesnar match.
If the guy that he's going against is CM Punk, and just from what the storytelling and the drama that's been built up with these guys going back and forth along with a Paul Heyman, hell yeah, I want to see it. That's what you want to do. You have CM Punk standing in the middle of the ring, taking on Brock Lesnar. Doesn't back down, right? And then all of a sudden, he gets the upper hand on Brock Lesnar, and then Brock Lesnar turns it around, and then he's on top again. I mean, that's what I want to see.
And Paul Heyman in the corner making those faces.
Yeah, making the faces and praying and stuff, and saying, please don't do that. But the whole thing is, so the the John Cena match and Daniel Bryan match, who do you want to see in that match? You don't want to see John Cena. And I don't think anybody else wants to see John Cena. You look at the pop that Daniel Bryan's getting. He's getting a way better pop than John Cena has for the past I don't know when. Unless you go to some stupid-ass town where people are so still dumb. If you can go someplace down south where the babyface gets cheered like crazy, and that's when John Cena has his pop. But nobody wants to see John Cena. They want to see Daniel Bryan fight against John Cena. And I'd be very interested to see, is John Cena versus Daniel Bryan, is that going to be the main event? Or is it going to be CM Punk versus Brock Lesnar? And if CM Punk and Brock Lesnar isn't the main event, there's a problem there. Because I'm not going to watch
There's no way that CM... Why did you think all of a sudden CM Punk's going to be in a main event?
Because he's the best flipping wrestler they have on the thing.
Have you seen any evidence to indicate...
No.
No.
But what is the match that you want to see at SummerSlam? The one match you want to see at SummerSlam, what is it? Honestly. I bet you that Daniel Bryan versus John Cena isn't even in your top two.
I really want to... See, the thing is, it's almost like the two sides of a coin, right? Because the thing is, you got a CM Punk match where generally you wouldn't care about a Brock Lesnar match, but the build-up is so good, and CM Punk can make anybody look good. And Daniel Bryan is the exact same way, right? So, like, I mean, I have more interest in watching Brock than I do Cena, because as boring as Brock is, the build-up, like I said, with Heyman's good, and Brock can still work. And the other thing, too, is CM Punk has a style that is kind of similar to that MMA style anyway. So, like, it's a good battle, right? With John Cena, I could care less about John Cena. But John Cena, like we said, when he had some matches with Punk, when he had some matches with some guys that can work, they can make him look really good, too. And Daniel Bryan's a guy that's making everybody look good. So they're almost kind of the same in that sense. They're both going up against someone that can make them look great. I'm interested, but I'm more interested because of what Daniel Bryan's been doing.
Thank you.
Not because of John Cena. But look, this is me and you talking.
Yeah.
Okay. You're asking like a question about like why do they view it this way, right? You know, all I can say is there's enough people out there that are spending the money on John Cena merch, and if they have whatever market research they think they have that says that the reason why people are buying pay-per-views is because John Cena, then that's going to be the reason why it's going to stay the way it is.
I don't want to live in a world where 10 or 15 years from now, I have to hear how great John Cena was. You know who John Cena is? John Cena is Bruno Sammartino. There's this great reverence. People that never seen Bruno Sammartino wrestle, like our generation, right? We had to hear how great Bruno Sammartino was. And we look at this guy and go like, how the hell was this guy the top guy in their company?
I got an even better one that we actually did get to see a little bit. Harley Race.
Harley Race, okay. Yeah. Yeah,
because we saw the very tail end of Harley Race's career when he was still really, like you said, he was revered and like talked about as like one of these all-time guys.
I don't think at the time he was.
No, he was at the end of his career, but they still revered him like this.
I disagree with you.
I mean,
that.
Maybe not on a Bruno Sammartino.
Now that we know about his, at least, well, I know that his battles with Ric Flair, but when he was the king in WWF, we didn't know any different. We didn't know any better. We just thought this guy was fat and like, who the hell is this guy with the outdated afro? Right. Or like, who the hell is this? And he didn't have that great of a run in WWF towards the end.
Yeah.
You know, they treated him respectfully, but it wasn't until he was 8 or 10 years retired when we started kind of looking back at history and figuring out more of what wrestling's about and who was who, then we're like, oh, well, this guy was one of the top guys. And he has done a lot of work. It's been copied over and over again, the stuff that he did. The bounty that he put on Ric Flair, that was done by Evolution. And the funny thing is that the guy in Evolution was Ric Flair. So yeah. It's been used over and over again.
Yeah.
I just see this guy, I don't want to 10 or 15 or 20 years from now have to see video packages again of how great this guy was when he wasn't.
That's going to happen.
It is going to happen, and that's what makes me mad. I don't. This guy sucks, and the whole thing is that I have to sit here and have people that revere him. He's not that good, and I mean, I don't have to say he's not that good. It's kind of like the same thing. Like, okay, look what happens with Edge, right? Edge retires, and everybody says Edge is so great. Edge is so great, but he backs it up. And I was never a big fan of Edge. I respected Edge. I was never a big fan of him. But when I started watching these video packages and what other people say about him and look back, because I wasn't watching wrestling at that time. You were. But I have a newfound respect for Edge of the stuff that he did when I wasn't watching. Mm-hmm. I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
I don't. Now that I'm watching John Cena in his prime, if you can call that, this guy sucks, and I know 10 or 15 years down the line, he's going to be revered as one of the greatest ever, and it's bullshit.
All right. Well, okay. So here would be my question to you then. Okay, and that, it's actually kind of interesting to bring that up today because a little of a Twitter, like, mini conversation I had, but, okay, why is that? Okay, is part of the reason because, like, sure, you got, like, the WWE machine that's telling you how great he is, and then, like, the way wrestling is, you could just back it up by saying, well, he won the title X amount of times, so he's up there. But you get guys, like, the thing is, like specifically, I'll say JR, right? JR is always talking up how good John Cena is, right? And I would think that JR knows better than that, right? I mean, he knows who, like, these guys that were really great were. So do you think he really believes? Because, like, in a lot of what he says, like, he'll say, like, you know, I'm not employed by WWE. You know, I say my own opinions or whatever. But does he really feel that way, or is he just spewing what he's supposed to spew? Because the thing is, who are the people, like, you know, there's us, and we had guys that we listened to growing up and said, that's how we knew about a Harley Race or a San Martino, okay? But, like, those broadcasters were really pumping up those guys that had earned that legendary status. Like, with the Cena thing, you feel like, you know, they're telling you that because they just want, they're trying to create something that isn't necessarily there. So would it take someone like JR or some of the really legendary guys to come out and say, nah, this guy isn't really that good? I mean, because no one will come out and say that.
No one will come out and say that because there's only one game in town. And you talk about TNA, and TNA is getting better, but TNA is still looked at as a joke. I mean,
TNA is getting worse, by the way.
Okay, well, you're saying that it was good and then it got really bad, whatever it is. And the only thing, the good thing they had going for him was Bully Ray, and then, of course, he loses the title. I mean, I was really, really close to starting to watch TNA because I heard Bully Ray was making moves, and I was interested in it because this guy's finally getting his due where he can do what he wants to do. There's only one game in town, and no one is gonna talk bad about their supposed cash cow or their number one guy or whatever the lackeys in the WWE say, like, this guy is the best, we draw the most money with him. I just, it's kind of a slow movement for me where I'm looking at their roster. I'm looking at all these other guys. And a year and a half ago or a year ago when we first started this thing, we're saying, like, all these guys are being held down to keep John Cena up on top.
Right.
Well, these guys aren't being held down anymore. They are slowly, slowly, slowly starting to build momentum. Mm-hmm. And any storyline that they have or any work that they're doing, you take your boy Dolph Ziggler for example. This guy, whenever he comes out, him having that small, brief moment of success as the World Heavyweight Champion, I think has opened a lot of eyes for people. Whenever he's on TV, people will stop and watch what he's doing because they know this guy is one of the best workers around. And to me, he's getting pushed off on the side. He's not in the title picture anymore. I'm kind of angry about it, but at the same time, it's like, this guy's very entertaining to watch. And I don't mind it because at least I'm being entertained while I'm watching it. Mm-hmm. WWE right now, they're towing a fine line. They're keeping John Cena up on top, but nobody really cares about his matches. You want to talk about JR? I think JR respects what John Cena stands for or what he should stand for within a wrestling company. I think JR is looking at the role of John Cena and how he sees John Cena and says, like, well, this is the way the business is supposed to be, and John Cena has to be the top guy if we want to keep this business model the way it's going. Well, the business model isn't in 1990, it isn't in the Attitude Era, it isn't in the 1980s. I don't know right now. There's so much growth potential. There's so many guys coming up. There's so many wrestlers that are creating a ton of buzz. And granted, there's a new platform too. You have, in the first time, you have a social media platform where people can say exactly what they want. You follow people that you agree with in wrestling. I'll follow people that I don't agree with in wrestling. But when something happens on TV, the reaction is instantaneous. It's not like we wait until Monday morning when we go to school and we're waiting for school to start and there's five or six guys talking about wrestling going, like, well, does John Cena really suck? am I right in feeling this way? And then you have four or five people kind of say the same thing or disagree, and you have that conversation then. It's instantaneous.
Yeah.
It's not the same type of business model anymore that I think JR is talking about. I think JR, I respect JR, but I think he's pretty dated. I think he's dated in the way that wrestling was back then. And the reason why I like JR is because that's the way I want wrestling to be. And I don't – the WWE is the best when John Cena doesn't have the belt. When he's involved in some stupid-ass feud that you don't care about, and even if he's the main event and he doesn't have the belt, I'm totally fine with that. Because I don't care about that match. I care about the belt. I care about who's the champion. That there's still an old-school part of me that still cares about who the champion is, and I want to see the best guy have the belt. Daniel Bryan, to me, can have the belt. Am I a big fan of Daniel Bryan? I'm not really a big fan of his. I enjoy what he does in the ring. I really don't like his promos. I don't like his yes and no's. I really don't care about it. But the guy proves week in and week out in the ring. So I'll listen to his yes and no. I won't listen to John Cena. I won't listen to a John Cena promo because he doesn't deliver the goods. Did I answer your question?
I don't even know. Not necessarily, but... I mean, in a way, yeah. I mean, roundabout, yeah. Because, yeah, your perspective of what JR's perspective is, that makes sense that, you know, he's working on the way that the business was when he grew up and through the time when he was actually, like really involved in the creative and all that. And I think he has a lot to offer, like, definitely, you know, if he still wanted to. But, yeah, just, you know, it's like, I would like to look to see guys like that or... like older wrestlers or older guys like the broadcaster or whatever that would say, like, you know, like, it just seems like everyone's sucking this guy off all the time, how good John Cena is and how, oh, you know, he's clearly, you can't question he's one of the best and this and that. Like, I've seen nothing from him to let me think that he would sniff like the top 20, 25 wrestlers I've seen and watched in my lifetime.
He's not even the top 50 wrestlers I've ever seen.
I'm going to just do a number out there without thinking about it. But, yeah, and that's the thing. And we both watched a lot of wrestling. And so, but I think, you know.
As long as WWE has a Legends contract where you can be a part of their Legends program and get paid for pretty much doing nothing, nobody's going to say anything bad about John Cena.
Right. Because they always, yeah, because that's their main source of income at the end of the day, right? Yeah, I guess, I mean, that's probably what it is, but, I mean, I think you need to, if you're going to break this whole idea of how great John Cena is or isn't, I mean, it'd have to be some people at the, you know, that have some clout kind of come out and saying, no, you know, start making a top 10 list, like, and find some way to legitimately say John Cena cracks a top 10 list, like, you know, not necessarily you or me, I mean, we could do that all day. But if you were to see, like, okay, let's say JR. Nah, I'm not trying to pick on JR. I like JR. I like following him. But, you know, he's always the first name. He's kind of like the first name that comes.
He's the Bible.
Right.
Pretty much, yeah.
And I'd like to see, okay, like, Jim Ross named the top 10 wrestlers, right? And to see if he could even stomach putting John Cena in the top 10. See, maybe he would because he'd feel like he has to, but I don't think. I can't believe that he would really think that he is.
I don't think that he would put... First of all, I think JR would put John Cena in the top 10. But I don't think that he'd put him in the top 10 because he feels like he has to. I truly believe that he believes that John Cena is a top 10 wrestler because of his earning power, because of what he does for the company. And see, that is always kind of the argument with John Cena, is that John Cena is, and I've said this before, he's a necessary evil. You need him to be the face of the company. You can't have... a guy like CM Punk for right now in the whole PG era, whatever it is, be your face of the company. You can't have Daniel Bryan be the face of the company. There's no guy that the only guy that can go toe to toe against, say, like a McMahon or whoever the GM is going to be a guy like CM Punk. Daniel Bryan can probably do it too, but there's no future with having Daniel Bryan, as he's never going to be the poster boy of this company. Because he doesn't fit the bill, and that's why John Cena is where he is. So it's kind of, maybe it's a thing where before, where the WWE is like, well, we don't have anybody else but John Cena, so we have to make this guy the top guy no matter what. And then they didn't do anything else about it. they didn't bring up anybody new. They didn't bring up anybody and let them explore their character. Well, now they're at a point now where John Cena's their top guy. But they have a whole roster. You look at that roster top to bottom.
It's good.
There's no weakness. You have the one Crime Time guy, but he's never on TV. you still probably have Koshi Tatsu or whatever the guy's name, and Yuka Tatsu, Yakisoba Tatsu. You don't see those guys. They're probably their weakest guy that is anybody on their roster is Kofi Kingston. And that's pretty much it. But Kofi can still do stuff in the ring.
It was nice kind of seeing Kofi again after the absence yesterday.
That's very nice of you to say. I could care less. I think Kofi's pretty boring.
Yeah, well, I think he is, but I think he's really boring when you see him doing the same thing every week. If I hadn't seen him, for like 2 or 3 months, I was fine watching the match. The biggest character change he's had in the last 10 years. He's wearing pants now.
Yeah, I think Kofi represents everything that's wrong with the WWE. It's just a guy that should go to someone and say, you know what, my spot. I don't deserve to be in this spot. I deserve to be higher. And for a small part, I think your boy Dolph is another problem in the WWE. You have all these guys that can perform, have proven that they can perform, and they gave Dolph Ziggler a slight chance to move himself up. And then for some reason, they stopped it and they changed it. And they said, okay, now you're going to be a mid-card guy, and you're going to go against AJ and Big E. So what does he do about it? He has a great match with Big E, and to me, on Raw, that was probably the best match that I saw, and that's the one that I enjoyed the most.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, man.
And that's Dolph's fault because he's not telling Vince McMahon, fuck you?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think there needs to be a lot of people that every guy that has never fit the mold of the WWE and has become successful and has become one of the top guys has pretty much told Vince that, or said, my spot should be here, and you have me down here. Shawn Michaels, to me, is the poster boy for that. I think CM Punk CM Punk doesn't do that without Shawn Michaels. I think a guy like Edge, you can do a guy like Edge that does it. Edge is a little bit taller, he's a little bit more versatile. I think CM Punk is a little bit more versatile, too. But it's kind of funny, Daniel Bryan has been on record saying that there's a lot of guys back there that are happy just earning a paycheck. When they come around and say, hey, who wants to be in this match? There's a lot of guys that will hide in the back and don't want to do it because they don't want to put themselves out there. In the age of a guaranteed contract, that's what you're going to get. So,
well, it's actually funny, I thought, too, because I was reading.
That's a nice save, by the way. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, it actually fits in with this part of the conversation. But I was reading some stuff, and like, the article was through Bleacher Report, but it was from Meltzer, right? Whose information is always solid. And Meltzer was saying that that actually Vince McMahon was really high on Daniel Bryan. And I thought that was kind of funny because, like, traditionally, that's the kind of guy that Vince doesn't like. And I would have thought if there was any internal disagreement, it would be like Triple H trying to say, let's give Bryant the push, and Vince saying, no, you know, he's not the guy. But Meltzer, like, his wording was pretty funny. Because he said that McMahon's a big fan on Daniel Bryan, and it sounds like he's kind of behind the push, but McMahon is taking all the credit for Daniel Bryan like gaining this charisma and stuff. So he's like, I guess McMahon is saying that he's the guy that taught Daniel Bryan how to be a star. So like, even in McMahon's like own like kind of twisted mind, even though like he never liked Daniel Bryan, now that he's good, he's still going to take the credit for it. Which I'm totally fine with, that that's what it takes to get Daniel Bryan to the top. Because I think Punk's the best, but I think Daniel Bryan in the ring right now is just as good as Punk, and I think he deserves to get a good run right now.
Yeah, and I'm kind of, any run that he's going to have, you still have Randy Orton in the background.
Yeah, Randy Orton in the background.
But Randy Orton, to me, has earned his stripes once again. So I don't have a problem with anything that Randy Orton's... Anything that's going to happen with Randy Orton, I have no problem with.
Okay, so there's that. And also to kind of tie up, I think, the original question that we ripped off of. I think...
You still remember the question? Because I forgot.
No, but I know we diverged somewhere around here. I said, like... Well, I wasn't able to answer your question very well. But I thought that just the whole build is kind of odd. And when you're asking about, like, well, what's going to happen with John Cena... Like, I'm not saying that there's going to be some John Cena heel turner or anything like that. But the whole dynamic of the McMahons and then Cena and Daniel Bryan as two faces, I don't know. It almost seems like the couple allusions to, oh, we're going to give Bryan the corporate makeover, right? You know, it would be an interesting time for them to do something with, like, some kind of corporate team again. And, I mean, I don't think, as I've said many times, I don't think John Cena will be a good heel. But if John Cena were to go corporate, like, that would probably be the one way you could make him a compelling character and have it make sense.
The whole problem that I have with any type of corporate type aspect storytelling that they're going to do, what is the one former storyline that you're going to compare it to?
The Rock.
And who else? I mean, come on.
The corporate Rock.
No, but corporate versus the wrestler. What is the one?
Austin.
Yeah. And here is the other thing, too, that I have a problem with anything that's going to happen in that type of way. That was to me, a very natural type progression of, I think they had the idea, and then Austin was such an overpowering character, and he had the fans behind him. Now, once again, I liked Austin, but I wasn't a big fan of Austin. I liked The Rock a whole lot better. Kind of like the same situation you have now with CM Punk and, well, I'm not even going to do that comparison, but, I mean, we like CM Punk better than any top guy that's there right now. Yeah. And to me, CM Punk, well, let me finish my thought. It was very believable for me because Austin was so good on the mic and was so good in terms of the way he told stories and his natural charisma, is that when he went up against Vince McMahon, it was very believable. You really thought that Austin really didn't give a fuck about anybody and he was going to do whatever the hell he wanted to do, because that was Steve Austin's personality. Now, anytime you do it now, are you going to do that with Daniel Bryan? I mean, Daniel Bryan isn't a strong... He's not a strong enough character. You know it's scripted with him.
Yeah,
with John Cena, you know it's scripted with him.
Yeah, but it's just a natural guy to play the Steve Austin role.
Of course.
And it's CM Punk.
Exactly. And they were doing it with John Laurinaitis. And who faltered in that one? It was John Laurinaitis, because Laurinaitis couldn't do anything. And this guy was part of Surfer Dudes or Two Cool Dudes or whatever it's called. He doesn't have the chops to do it. McMahon has the chops. He's always had the chops.
Exactly.
Triple H in this role, I think, will have the chops as well. I think Stephanie has proven it with your boy, with Chris Jericho. Stephanie McMahon made a star out of Chris Jericho. She could in the WWF she did.
I think her phony fun bags made the star, but continue.
But you know what I mean. So any type of corporate type of angle that you're going to do, it's not going to be believable. It's not going to be as successful as it can be, because you have the wrong guy in the wrong spots doing it.
Yeah, I don't know though, because okay,
you think Daniel Bryan can go toe to toe against a corporate Vince McMahon?
I think CM Punk
can, but he's not going to do it.
Why not?
He's fighting Brock Lesnar
now.
How is he gonna? So,
well, this is this McMahon thing, from everything that the interwebs are reporting, is gonna go through WrestleMania. This is a build that's starting now and gonna last at least through Mania. Okay, so you got plenty of time to build. I'm not trying to go all turn John Cena heel here, okay? Because I'm not, just for purposes of this argument, okay? If you make John Cena go corporate, right, then he sells out like The Rock did, and then you have Vince do the speaking on his behalf, and then CM Punk can go against both of them. I mean, CM Punk can go and he can lose matches on the way to build up to a title match at WrestleMania.
If you follow that logic, that isn't going to work, just because when The Rock went corporate, The Rock was the guy on the mic. Vince McMahon, he was on the mic the whole time. The second that The Rock went corporate, Rock took over. And he carried that. Vince McMahon became like his, not his lackey per se, but he definitely played second fiddle to The Rock during that whole time, because Rock could carry it. John Cena has proved nothing that he could carry it. And if Daniel Bryan goes corporate, I don't believe, now do I think Daniel Bryan can be successful in that spot? Yes, I can. Okay, in this age of what the WWE product is, Daniel Bryan can be successful being a corporate person. But the only difference is that you know it is scripted with him. He hasn't shown any flair. Actually, I'll take that back. I thought his promo that he did, when he said that he got fired and he came back, he said that's happened to me before. That's like, I was like, okay, good. Wow. I mean, like, that to me is honestly brutal. Honestly,
his promo with McMahon was really good. His mic work's been pretty good.
I think there's been a small transformation. You talked a couple weeks ago. You thought like he was too much of a comedy show, and I mean, there's definitely some truth to that. But I think over the last couple of weeks, like he's cut a lot more promos that were more serious, and I think he's done a good job on it. So I mean, I don't see any problem with him that way.
I think the other twist that they could do is that they make if Randy Orton cashes in and the McMahons were behind it the whole time, and you have Randy Orton be the corporate guy. I think that works.
I did that in my wrestling video game about 3 weeks ago.
So. Very good. Yeah. See. Hey. Yeah. Good time in there. So yeah, but the thing that spawned this whole thing was what I'm saying right now is that. Anything you have to make up storylines, or you have to take the emphasis off of John Cena in order for him to be successful as a champion. He cannot grow as a character. He can't do anything else because he's a one sided character. You have to take shortcuts with the guy,
right?
And that's not what your top guy should be. And that's what I'm getting tired of. The good news out of this whole thing, as compared to me saying this a year ago when we first started this thing, was that. You're looking at the WWE and you're going like, well, what the hell are they going to do because their top guy isn't working? Well, their top guy isn't working now, but they have plenty of reasons for me to watch up and down the line. And of course, I'm going to say CM Punk. Of course, I'm going to say the Wyatt family. I mean, that's the reason why I watch now is the Wyatt family. I want to see the Wyatt family on Raw. They come on and I go, damn, we still have CM Punk we get to watch too. So that's one, too. Ziggler comes out. You're like, wow, you know, that's what I want to watch, too. Big E comes out. I'm like, I definitely want to see Big E.
Shield.
That's the funny thing. Like, Shield, remember, Shield for a while was carrying both SmackDown and Raw. But let me finish. And then you have Cody Rhodes and you have Sandow. That I want to see that, too. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, when the Usos come out, I want to see the Usos now. So it's good. And the Usos lost on Raw. I'm like, wait a minute, they lost?
Yeah. I was surprised, but I had no problem with it.
Neither did I.
So, like, that's a respectable team. If they let them get a streak going, like, that team could do some damage.
You let people that have talent win, and you push them the right way, it works.
What about Christian winning the...
I don't care about Christian right now. It's, you know, I respect Christian. I like Christian. I think Christian's done, dude. I really don't have. I like the guy just because of what he's done in the past. But do I want to see get another championship run? Yeah. You know what? I want him to beat Del Rio, and then I want Sandow to come out and cash him.
That's
money
what I'm
back.
Saying. Well, do you think that's what it's going to be?
I don't know.
I like the fact that they threw Christian a bone and let him win that match and get the title match because he can put on a good match with anybody, mm-hmm. and he's beaten Del Rio before. And exactly, I like to see him get that belt and have a little swan song. But, you know, Sandow has to cash it in against somebody, and it's not going to be against Del Rio because they're not
going to. Well, Sandow needs a lackey, dude. Sandow needs a lackey. Cody Rhodes for a while was his lackey in terms of what his character was. Mm-hmm. And who did Del Rio kind of kick out?
Ricardo.
Now, there's a lot of things that can happen with Ricardo. Either Del Rio and Ricardo, that could be a work right there where they're working an angle, and then Ricardo can at the last second turn on Christian or whoever it is, and Del Rio can retain the title. There's not going to be a cash-in, which is fine. I don't have a problem with that because Sandow and Cody Rhodes, they have something good going on. I'm glad that they're not fighting over. I'm hoping that the Money in the Bank isn't going to be fought over somewhere down the future. I know for now, for SummerSlam, it's not going to. You don't know. Maybe SmackDown, something happens different, but we probably would have heard something. But I like the feud that's going on right there with them. Cody has really excelled. He's kind of this whole thing that he's really delivered, and Sandow's always delivered. So, but Cody's not. They're on equal playing ground with those two.
So, what about this? So, Ricardo becomes Christian's guy.
Exactly.
Is that what you're saying?
He can be.
And then he goes and he helps Christian to beat
Del Rio,
and then immediately turns on him.
Yeah.
And Sandow comes out.
Or Sandow comes out and. Does the Money in the Bank, and then Christian kind of looks like he's going to win, and then Ricardo can do something. And then you end that, and then it's like, okay, and then you have the matches down the line of SummerSlam. The main thing is, though, is I think we got to get SummerSlam. I mean, it's looking like a good card, and it's probably something that we're going to have to do. But in that respect, the WWE is doing its job. Do I want to see Daniel Bryan and John Cena? I kind of do, but I just get tired of having to. My biggest thing is that I don't. My biggest problem with John Cena right now is that I don't want to hear 15, 20 years down the line how great this guy was and people actually believe it.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, too. It's like, you know, like I think I got into a Twitter dispute with somebody a couple of weeks ago also on something like he was saying, oh, no, you know, I didn't. It was like I was pissed at myself because I read one of those.
Like, you read the Bleacher Report and you're like, damn.
Yeah, let me back up for a second here. Okay, there's some good stuff on Bleacher Report. But like 85% of that are some of the biggest trolls like that you'll ever see, and that the more I've read it, the more I realized that thing really kind of pisses me off. But it was something like how like it's a false argument to say that John Cena isn't a good wrestler, and it's like, and then like the beginning is saying how, well, you know, some people will say that like you know, he only had good matches against. Against like people that made him look good, but let me run down a list of great matches that he's had, and it's like CM Punk, Edge, it's all like the best workers at the time, right? And so now, what are you gonna get? You're gonna get him going against Daniel Bryan, and I'm pretty sure the match is gonna be good, and I'm pretty sure it's mostly gonna be because Daniel Bryan's gonna make the guy look like $1 million. I do like this little thing, even though I'm getting sick and tired of every fucking week I gotta hear about how John Cena's got an injury. Like nobody else has an injury. But I did like the fact that he showed it's a nasty-looking elbow injury, and I think that could play really well into the yes lock or the no lock, whatever you want to call it. So I think it could be interesting, and I could definitely see Daniel Bryan coming out ahead here.
There's been two good matches that I've seen John Cena do where I'm actually looking at his match and saying, like, this guy has actually had a good match. And not so much his competition has given him a good match. And the first one is, yeah, I believe it was SummerSlam, and it was John Cena versus The Big Show. And that was way back when he was first starting out. And that's because he was able to put the attitude adjustment on mm-hmm. The Big Show. And we actually saw that match together. And I was like, okay, he's the next guy in line.
Was that up in Sacramento?
It was here. It was actually here in San Jose at my old apartment.
Okay.
Next to the arena. But I remember that watching that match going, okay, this guy has potential, and if they're going to give him the power route, he can do it. So that was fine. The other match is probably about three matches. Lo and behold, he had a good three match run with someone, but it was against Randy Orton. I thought he had when Randy Orton didn't have the title. I think when Randy Orton like won a title,
talking about like 3 years ago.
So. Yeah, it was okay. right before or right after The Rock. He had really good matches with Randy Orton, and it wasn't like Randy Orton was carrying him. I thought they both carried each other, and they did really well. And it's kind of funny now that Randy Orton, to me, has worked really hard at his craft and of him being in the ring, and it's working really well. John Cena hasn't progressed, but he's still going to stay at the top. But it looks like there's other elements in there where it can make it watchable, and that's the one thing that WWE is doing right. So after all this John Cena bashing that I had to get it off my chest because I was just getting tired of it over and over again.
Is that why you were in a bad mood when I came over, Jim?
I am. Maybe it was. Yeah, maybe it was. You know, during that three-man tag match, and John Cena is looking like a gorilla, looking at the crowd with his big old bug eyes out and his jaws protruding and stuff, and he's trying to get the crowd to say like the crowd to want for him to get tagged in, and it's like. I just get tired of the antics that he does. I didn't like the whole preface of that three-man tag. Why the hell would Daniel Bryan and Randy Orton want to team up with this guy? I mean, wouldn't you want to beat the crap out of him? Wouldn't you help the Shield beat the crap out of him?
That's exactly what Orton did.
He did, but, I mean, do it during the match. I mean, if you're the Money in the Bank guy, or if you're the guy with the Money in the Bank, why would you tag in? Wouldn't you help the Shield beat the crap out of John Cena? I mean, I would just come in. I would come in and get a tag and put John Cena in and have all three guys that she'll just beat the crap out of him, and then I can cash the Money in the Bank. If I'm Daniel Bryan, I would want John Cena and Randy Orton to both get their ass kicked. I don't care who it is. I would want both of them to get their ass kicked because he has a match in SummerSlam and he can use that to his advantage.
Yeah, but, well...
See, that's a smart wrestling fan thinking, you know?
Right, but let me counter that then. Like, they're still playing Daniel Bryan as a face, and that's not a very babyface thing to do, right? So yep. It actually made sense that he would come out and try to help, like, be the third guy to help against a Shield attack. Now, Randy Orton, I think in the whole way that they play him as this nebulous great character, I think he did exactly what he should have done.
I thought he came out great.
He got in on the match. Like, where you're advocating, like, if he were to just to, like, tag in John Cena and pull a Macho Man and jump off the apron and put the briefcase on his shoulder and give him that have a nice day, like, that would be a straight heel move, which they're not, I mean, there's all the anticipation that this can happen at any moment, but he's still playing it very great. So for him to get involved in the match and then do his stuff at the end, like, it plays perfectly to the way that his character's going. So,
yeah,
so I thought they did it absolutely correctly.
The key word...
And I wasn't... Let me just finish because I never got to finish my point earlier on.
You had a point?
Way early on, okay. At the beginning of the show. You
talking about TNA?
No, you're right after that. Okay. You painted me into the corner that I was like disappointed in the result of the match. I didn't care that Shield got disqualified. I just thought it was stupid the reason they got disqualified. If they get disqualified, I'd like to be for something that is a reasonable disqualification, is all I was saying.
No, the outcome of that match, and I think we can finish off and end this and go into something else, because we're actually getting close to an hour, which is always a good thing. It doesn't feel like an hour.
Not at all.
Randy Orton came across really well in that, and it's the funny thing, you had the marks on Twitter saying, like, oh, Randy Orton's turning heel now, you know, we're watching Randy Orton turn heel right in front of our eyes, and it's like, no, dude, he's not turning heel, it's like, he's playing this great character, and I think the more great that he is right now, anything that they want him to do, if they want him to be a babyface, if they want him to be a heel, it's going to be perfect hit. It's going to be perfect for whatever direction he goes, because he has really, his stock has risen for at least me. The stuff that he's done, he's advanced his great character. It's not an effort. He's not really trying. He's still kind of in the mold of what his character has always been. I didn't like when they tried to make him a super face and he was shaking everybody's hands and all that stuff. What I did like was last SmackDown when he faced Daniel Bryan and Daniel Bryan won and he shook his hand at the end. I thought it worked. It was really good. It's like he's starting now. He's a great character, but you know where his kind of priorities lie. And he shows respect for Daniel Bryan. So at the end of that match, him coming across as a great character, it extended him, and it's preparing him for whatever what they want to do with him, so it worked in that respect. The Shield kind of getting some of their former glory back by stopping what other people want to do. If the Shield walk away after getting disqualified, that's a problem, because then it's like, you know, you're pushing the Shield off to the side. The new Shield is the Wyatt family. The Wyatt family is kind of like the new Shield now, and all that work that they did ahead of time, you're forgetting about these three great workers, and you just push them off to the side. Them coming down the ramp, it's like, that works, that's good. So the Shield was able to come up, what was better from it, Randy Orton was better from it, Daniel Bryan was better from it, and the only guy that you kind of forget about is John Cena, so I'm all for that. I have no problem with that. So there it is.
All right.
Okay, so...
Is it time?
Is it time? Do you have your couple pieces of paper for the Hall of Kayfabe?
I do.
Okay, so what's the Hall of Kayfabe? Real fast for people that don't know how this all started. So once again, I'm Bad News Ramen. I bet I have my donuts over here.
Yeah, so basically, well, we wanted to do like an actual segment at some point in the show. And I thought, like...
Because you didn't like my John Laurinaitis, right?
Not really.
Not really?
Not really. It was about as bad as my Montalban, but...
No, come on! You can't even do the Montalban on cue.
I probably couldn't.
Yeah,
but I could do it.
The John Laurinaitis episode, webisode or podcast that we did,
it's still
it's still the most highest hit on all. Yeah. Jeez.
All right, so
people like me, Kevin.
All right, so this just became kind of our thing where we kind of like throw back to wrestlers that we grew up watching, kind of talk about why we got into wrestling. And kind of just give some respect to guys that, you know, they weren't always like top of the card guys or guys that were super over necessarily. Like, you're never going to see no like Rowdy Piper up in here.
Or no Paul Roma, which you tried to induct a couple weeks ago.
That was good. That was good. But Jim Powers is not.
He's out of fire.
All right. So, I'll give you a secret choice here, because I have a good selection of candidates. Do you want this to be a wrestler, or do you want this guy to go into the wing of supporting staff here that we started with when Jesse the Body?
As long as it's not another announcer, I don't feel like talking about an announcer.
No, it's not an announcer.
I don't know, man. It's kind of a...
I can go either way.
You can go either way. So, in honor of you calling me up saying, like, let's do it right now because I'm ready to go. I want to talk wrestling. And then you come on and start talking about TNA.
Well, I was ready to get too, but...
And you're on the phone talking to some dude about soccer uniforms and stuff. And should they wear cups at practice and everything like that. Yeah, it was something stupid. It's not stupid. I'm sorry. There's a lot of politics in youth soccer. And there's a lot of bullshit as coaches that we have to deal with. So
yes.
I understand where it's come from. I'm just saying, just don't bring it around here. Because when we were ready to talk about wrestling, you get me out of my vibe. That's what I was so mad about. I was like, dude, I don't care about... I'm the most important... I'm the big man on campus over here. So when you walk into my house... All eyes on me, Tupac. All eyes on me. So I'll let you pick the direction that you want this podcast to go. Which I tried to do in the beginning. You gave me TNA. So don't give me another flipping TNA, or I'm going to turn around and say that you have to pick the other guy. So it better be good. And I don't want a dead pause. Let's go. Let's do
it. Well, I have a lot of choices here, man. Okay. But this one I'm going to do. This is, I think, it's a little bit of an homage to you. And then also
starting off pretty good, okay.
And I think our producer JCP whatever the hell
JPCA
whatever I think he'll like this one too. So I think like this character for me kind of represents like
it's not Jack Tunney, is it?
No, it's not Jack. He kind of represents like when I started like looking at wrestling a little bit differently, and it's actually kind of good because. Like, my man over here actually alluded to early on, like, when we're kind of, like, the evolution of how I watch wrestling. And there was a point in time where, yes, I must admit it, I did like the Ultimate Warrior. I just kind of, like, he's colorful, you know, he's all yoked and this and that, kind of crazy. So, okay,
this is during the time. I mean, granted, when the Ultimate Warrior came around, yeah. I mean, big, like, wearing shirts of a guy wearing a shirt of some yoked out guy, all muscle ripped and stuff, was cool back then.
It was still
exciting. Like now you do it now, it's like, dude, why do you have a shirt of some yoked up guy, dude? What does that say about yourself? But go ahead.
Yeah. So I was just a mark for the guy because I was supposed to be. And we'd watch wrestling, and I think the first really great feud that Ultimate Warrior had was with the man that I'm going to induct today, and that is one Ravishing Rick Rude. Now, I was watching, and they have these matches. They had a good series of matches going, and I was generally cheering for Warrior, and you were always cheering for Ravishing Rick.
And who was right out of that? Who was in the right during that?
Tell
time?
The story. Okay. I mean, I think I gave you credit from the beginning, so okay. I'm probably going to get there. And then I remember you asked me, like, well, why do you like that guy better than Ravishing Rick Rude? And
well, why do I like Ravishing Rick Rude better than the Ultimate Warrior?
No, you asked me why I want, you know, Ultimate Warrior over Ravishing Rick Rude. And I had to kind of stop and think. I think you started kind of running down the list. Like, well, is he a better worker? No. It's like, does he talk better? No. I mean, I think the answer came down to, well, the guy's bigger, right? And like, it really kind of made me re-examine, like, wait, who are the guys that I really get into, and why do I watch some of these guys? And Rick Rude was kind of that guy. Like, dude was freaking yoked. I mean, he was like skinny. He wasn't. It was like pre-roids, I believe. So like, he was really cut, but like,
everybody was doing roids at that time. But yeah.
Okay. Well, at any rate, like, you know, it wasn't like he wasn't huge like the Warrior, but dude was just ripped. But like, his promos, his entrance was really great, and specifically, I think my all-time favorite was it was something like what I'd like to have is for all of you fat, out of shape South Carolina sweat hogs, keep the noise down while I give the ladies what they came to see. He always had some good quip for whatever town he was in to tell all the fat dudes in the audience to shut up while he took his robe off for the ladies. I thought that was all funny. And his ring work ended up being really good. I mean, it was at the time where you could still get away with like a reverse neck breaker as a finisher, granted, but like the guy was in multiple.
Oh, not his. No, I mean, his neck breaker was pretty legit.
Yeah.
That was legit. It wasn't a fast one. I mean, that one twisted that neck. That was pretty good.
Yeah. But, he went through all the old promotions. He did well in all of them. Was not, like, a world champion in WCW or WWE, but held a lot of belts. You know, he was, like, I think he was the first guy to beat Ultimate Warrior. And he took, because he took the Intercontinental from him.
Yeah.
And like, that was, like, I think, a really big deal, too, because he was a guy that, you know, everybody hated and everyone was supposed to hate. But, like, he had a really good run going there.
So we're inducting Rick Rude into the Kayfabe Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
That's a great choice. And it's funny how the conversation that we had about Rick Rude and Ultimate Warrior, I think it was even a case of, like, you were saying, like, well, he was bigger. And I was like, yeah, but his Rick Rude's physique is actually a better physique than the Ultimate Warrior's was.
My dad said that.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden you saw the, you're like, oh,
I
yeah.
just thought it was funny.
That was probably so Rick Rude, there's a lot of firsts with Rick Rude. I think that's probably the first time that me and your dad agreed on anything. and now, hey, now, like, I love his dad to death. I think his dad's a great guy. I think there was, you know, whenever you have a best friend and
you don't have to go all
yeah, ahead. but you're
stay on the Rick Rude topic.
But it speaks to me though. No, it's funny. There's a lot of firsts with this guy. So Rick Rude, when you looked at the guy, there's every reason to hate him. When I first saw him, I didn't like him. You know, I didn't like him. I didn't like his big old porn stash going.
His Magnum PI
yeah, look. And he had the whole big hair bear hairstyle back then. It's like, dude, I hate this guy. And then he
had the ugly ass tights with Jake Roberts' yeah. wife painted on him.
Yeah, and I was like, dude, I just don't like this guy. And then he'd do the gyrating hips and stuff. It's like, man, this guy's just straight corn. He just like it's everything like. Everything is me as a male. It's like he's the total opposite of what I think a
man should be.
Yeah, why would I like a guy that gyrates his hips and stuff or anything like that? So the guy that turned it around was my brother Jason. He was like 4 or 5. And Rick Rude would come out and he would just start rolling and laughing. And Jason to this day is still pretty quiet. But back then he was even more quiet. And so I'm watching wrestling and I don't even know he's back there. And Rick Rude comes on, I'm like, oh, God, here it comes again. And I know the stepmom is going to get all mad. She's like, what the hell are you watching? So I was kind of like,
not if Rick Rude's on the TV.
Well, I was kind of not, she didn't like him. I mean, but so I'm kind of like closet watching. I'm making sure nobody's around. And I kind of turn it on, you know, and start watching it. And I was like, oh, shit, like, Rick Rude's coming. I better find, like, something else to put on if someone comes downstairs.
For all the kids, we couldn't fast forward TV back then.
Yeah, and sometimes you wouldn't even have a remote. You'd have to go to the TV and change the channel.
With the pliers?
With the pliers, yeah, the good old pliers, and yeah. And the tint, you'd have to work on the tint and the V. Remember
put some foil on that shit?
The V scale and the H scale, and yeah, nobody knows about that, but that's what you said to
do.
Some
pliers on the antenna, some foil on the antenna.
But not to all tangents aside. So I'd be watching, all of a sudden I hear this little kid laughing in the back. I was like, what the heck? And this kid's like, he's on the couch just like rolling on the floor. He falls off the couch and just starts laughing, going all crazy and stuff. And so it kind of opened my eyes to that whole thing, going like, wow, that's, you know, okay, yeah. I think Rick Rude was the first heel that I ever liked. He was the first guy. He was the first wrestler that defined my pro wrestling watching career.
Before Tully?
Way before Tully, because we're watching WWF back then.
Yeah, well, you had cable, so I don't know when you started watching.
Well, I'm not sure when he. You know, it's always kind of funny when these matches happened. Like, I remember, I believe at the time, Steamboat was going against Flair, and I watched those matches, you know, where people say it was the best 3 matches of all time. Well, I watched two of those matches. I didn't watch when you won the championship, but I watched the last two, and that was all on free TV. But during that time, it's like I'm watching Flair and going, like, I kind of like this guy. I kind of like him. And even when, and that was after the Four Horsemen, and even during the Four Horsemen, I'm kind of watching going like, well, these guys are pretty cool, but I wasn't fully committed to liking them. I was like, I'm kind of looking at the crowd reaction, and there's a lot of people that were starting to like them. I'm like, yeah, these guys have something. And then when Flair went into this whole thing with Steamboat, now me and you were big Steamboat fans, and when Steamboat won that title, it was like redemption for us, saying like, wow, you know, Steamboat won. But even during those matches, even though, like, to me, I knew Flair was kind of controlling the matches in terms of the way they were flowing, I was still cheering for Steamboat. I kind of wanted Steamboat to win. It's funny, it was the best 2 out of 3 falls.
You're going to relate this back to Rick Rude?
I will relate it back to Rick Rude. It was the best out of 2 or 3 falls, and then when Steamboat won the best 2 out of 3 falls, I'm kind of watching, and I'm happy, but I'm kind of guilty for wanting Steamboat to win, because after the match I was like, well, Flair to me had the way better match, and I want Steamboat to win, so I guess I'm kind of happy. Rick Rude, when he was against the Ultimate Warrior, I like the Warrior too. When he came out, I was like, wow, this guy's yoked, he's big. Yeah, Ultimate Warrior. And then I just started kind of watching him and hearing him talk. I was like, and who the fuck is this guy? Why do I like this guy? I don't like him. And then when he was going against Rick Rude, it's kind of like the whole thing of when the Patriots won the first Super Bowl, you know, when they beat the Rams, you know, it's like I was coming at you saying like, oh yeah, Rick Rude's gonna beat the Ultimate Warrior, and you're like, oh, there's no way, you know, Ultimate Warrior is so big and this.
I had the Patriots beating the Rams, dude. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, but anyways, so I was just kind of make fun of it, like, so everybody else I was talking to, because I didn't talk to you about them being the Rams, but I'm like Patriots gonna beat the Rams. I didn't believe it. I'm like, yeah. Yeah, Patriots are gonna beat the Rams. Yeah, you watch, you know. They're like, yeah, man, you're a fucking idiot. I'm like, nah, they're gonna beat them, and I didn't believe it. But I'd come to you going like, hey man, Rick Rude, he's totally gonna beat the Ultimate Warrior, dude. And you're like, no way. I'm like, he's gonna beat him. He's gonna beat him. And then he actually beats him, and I was like, I'm sitting there going like, I was like, and we watched that match together too. And I was like, I told you he was going to beat him. You're like, nah. Bobby was holding his legs and this. But that kind of shaped my whole career of watching wrestling, was you have the guy that's supposed to be the star, and he doesn't have the goods. He has the look. He has the physique. He has everything going for him. The WWE's pushing him. But I didn't like him just because I thought he sucked. He didn't have the goods. Rick Rude had the goods. And he kind of became like a people's champion to me. It's like, that's, you know, there's no way that Rick Rude should lose the Ultimate Warrior, because Rick Rude is way better.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a defining moment to me, that match, was because they finally said, like, WWE finally said, it was like, we can do anything. You know, we can give it to Rick Rude, even though it's a heel move and he lost in a heel way. We're going to give the Intercontinental belt to him and beat this big, big-time superstar who was only second to Hulk Hogan. And I liked it. And there's probably some people out there that liked it too.
So Rude and the Horsemen are the ones that kind of, like, let you accept the fact that it was okay for you to let it heal. Is that kind of what you're...
I would say more so that the Horsemen were the ones that made me say, like, you know what, I like these guys, because I like their mic work, I like them in the ring, they're entertaining to watch, and you know what, sometimes it's cool to like the bad guy. I was kind of getting that whole mode of I like the bad guys, you know, because I'm getting tired of the babyface heels that have no personality. Mm-hmm. But Rude was the one that, you know, punctuated. He was the one that stamped it for me. He's the one he actually won, and he beat this big guy that nobody thought he could beat.
Yeah.
That really, to me, changed the course of me watching my wrestling career. I didn't realize that until you brought him up. And that's why I like the Hall of Kayfabe, because it's like, you bring out this guy that I haven't thought about in a long time. And when I hear you talk about it, your perspective, and I'm sitting there going like, you know what? He was the guy that made me like the heels. When Rick Rude won, and when I was dogging you the whole time about Rick Rude being the Ultimate Warrior, when he finally did it, that allowed me to start like the Horsemen. That allowed me to start liking Flair. If Rick Rude doesn't beat the Ultimate Warrior, I don't know if I like the Horsemen and Flair as much as I do now.
Yeah, because
it was vindication.
Yeah. Well, it opened up that it was okay for you to cheer for the bad guys.
Yeah.
So to speak.
Yeah.
To quote one Scott Hall there. And
he was in the Hall of Kayfabe as well.
Yes. Yeah. And so, just one more thing. I think, like, sometimes we kind of, like, throw in little tidbits here and there of things with these guys, too, while we're inducting them. And I think you'll remember, but, like, one of our all-time favorite Rick Rude moments is when he's in WCW. And it's a little thing. But
it's a great thing.
Yeah, because when he's in WWE, Bobby Heenan was his manager. And when he ultimately came to WCW, Bobby Heenan was the announcer, and he joined NWO. And NWO had one of these things where they were taking over the announce booth, and Rick Rude and Kurt Hennig and the guys walked up there. Bobby Heenan, in his cowering weasel character, looks over to him and goes, "Hi, Mr. Rude."
And what does Rude say? Rude say, "Hey, Bobby."
Hey, Bobby.
The other thing too, he was involved. He was also a major player in the Monday Night Wars, and people kind of forget about that too. One thing I do want to bring up was that he was the U.S. champion for WCW back when the U.S. champion was a major belt.
Was that like before he got to WWE?
It was after. So he left WWE. He got all yoked up in WCW, and I actually remember I saw him in WCW, and the first thing I thought was like, "Wow, this guy's really big now." and he was having great matches, way better matches than he did in WWE. And I said, you know, this guy can be a champion, and I can see him being a champion. There's things that kind of derailed that.
That's when he broke his neck, right?
I'm not sure.
Because I know he broke his neck, and because most of my time remembering him in WCW was more about
No, because he left WWE. WWF at that time, he went to WCW and he actually wrestled. He was part of the Dangerous Alliance with Arn Anderson and Paulie Dangerously, and there's Larry Zbysko and some other guys too. And then he went back to WWE.
And then he came back.
And the one thing I wanted to bring up with the Monday Night Wars was that he was on Raw, and that's when Raw was pre-taping their stuff. And then he was on Raw that night, and then when WCW came on, he was on WCW. So he was on both promotions on the same time.
Same night, yeah.
And that was always kind of like a big thing. That was like WCW was saying, like, it's kind of funny. That was one of the things. It wasn't the thing, but it was one of the things that made Raw become live, because they're being made look stupid by having Rick Rude over there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he, as small of a career that he's had, he was one of the guys that could have been a champion in WCW. There were some things that stopped that. There were some top-level guys. I think Hogan was one of them, and Rick Rude didn't want to work with Hogan because he hated Hogan, and he didn't want to, you know, he might have won the title, but Hogan was going to get it back, and Rick Rude didn't trust him. So he's like, I don't want to do business with Hogan, so they gave it back to Flair, and that whole thing happened with Flair and Hogan and stuff and everything. So as small of a guy as his career's had, he's pretty pivotal, not only for me and you, in terms of the way you watch wrestling, but also kind of in the Monday Night Wars too. So, by far, I think this is one of your this is one of your top three inductions. If I would have to rate it, I'd probably say he's probably the best induction that we've had so far, just because of the impact that he had on me and you. For him to make you not like the Ultimate Warrior anymore, and you saw the light, you know. That to me, that's worth it. So
I made up for the rough start there.
Exactly. And speaking of the rough start, we're gonna have to end it off right now.
Took me an hour and 15, but
yeah. So let's finish it off like we always do, and go from there.
And I'm not gonna go into this deep or anything, but anyone, if you're looking for something really funny on the internet, I told you about this earlier today. If you haven't seen it, look up CM Punk Grammar Slam. It's like the funniest thing I've seen in a long, long time. Better than anything that happened on Raw for sure. Did you watch it?
I haven't watched it, but I will watch it. Man, I've been. I mean, I've been coaching all day.
Hey, it's fucking hilarious, dude. So check that out.
Okay, so check out Grammar Slam,
especially if you've been like following CM Punk. Like, it's kind of good.
Now, are you gonna tweet CM Punk? Go, CM Punk. I mentioned the Grammar Slam on the podcast, and he's gonna put blocked.
Yeah, blocked. Yes. I say, please RT.
Please RT.
I mentioned you on my podcast. Please RT.
For people that don't know, though, this guy has been he has had his tweets read on the air of the Jim Rome Show twice, which is pretty flipping good. There's two that I know of. Maybe three times, right? Three times if you really look at it.
It's two or three.
Yeah, so that's and I always dog you on the amount of followers you have, but hey, you are like you've been on Jim Rome three times. I think that's great. If you wanted to be a staple on the Damon Bruce Show here on KMBR, you could be if you wanted to.
I'm going to be.
You are. That's good.
You got in there the other day, and I almost sent him a tweet on that very same subject.
But he didn't read it on the air or nothing. He read my tweet on the air? So I've been on the radio?
You're a contributor.
hey, look at that. You got a yaw.
We on the radio? We on the radio, dude?
So he said on the radio, huh?
Yeah.
I did not know that. So Bad News Ramen.
Yeah, he mispronounced your name.
What, how do you say it?
Bad News Raymond.
Oh.
Maybe Ramen. He corrected him. He self-corrected, but he came with Bad News Raymond at the beginning.
So our boy Mike Oz, he wrote something on, he's, our boy Mike Oz is, we came up together through the newspaper up in San Jose State, and now he's a big-time blogger for
Big
League Stew for Yahoo and stuff, and Damon Bruce mentioned it, and it was his birthday the day before, and it was funny. Damon Bruce was like, he's like, I don't give shout out to my to your friends and stuff. So I kind of used that against him and said, well, you gave a shout out to my friend, you didn't even know about it, and it's his birthday too and stuff. So I got it right on here, huh?
Yeah, he said, well, here's the thing. It's like, if I'm using your boy as for one of my stories, then he's gonna get the shout out.
Yeah. Hey, Adam's guy got right. You just made my night, man. Thanks a lot. So
I should have let off with this.
Yeah. Would have been a lot better. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, man.
Hey.
You're on the David Bruce Show. Hey, hey, guys. So finish it off like you always do.
All right. Yeah. So another pretty good week in wrestling. Heading towards SummerSlam. Looks like we're getting some momentum, maybe having to buy this bad boy. So we'll see how that goes. But I'm kind of looking forward to it. And that's about it, man. Things have been good.
Okay, so better have my donuts over here on Bad News Rama. Raymond? Bad News Raymond? Bad News Ramen. Check us out on mudaskill.podbean. Let me start over, because I'm trying to get it done at a certain amount of time. Check us out at mudaskill.podbean.com. If you check us out on Twitter, I'll tweet the link to our podcast. This guy usually retweets it. He still hasn't listened to a podcast episode yet, so let's try to get him to do that. And we are out, and we are good to go.
Something designed to make your spine whine one time. With DJ Honda, this is how we represent. You know what I'm saying? We're going to bash you in the head with something real, real nice. Y'all hold on. Here we go. Check it out. And you don't stop.
What up? Hip-hop is at the feel the bridge. From New York straight talk to the Tokyo shit. What up? Hip-hop is at the feel the bridge. From New York straight talk to the Tokyo shit.
With DJ Honda.
What up? Hip-hop is at the feel the bridge. From New York straight talk to the Tokyo shit. What up? Hip-hop is at the feel the bridge. From New York straight talk to the Tokyo shit.
Come on, come on, come on, baby.
Walk in New York with the big stick loaded. Most voted for the Daily Tabloid. From Tokyo to Roppongi Square, I'll be there. And as the plan unfurls, I freak the Geisha girl. So that X, I'm on New York, then the yellow cabs. I move your pectoral muscle worn down to your abs. My man Honda, not the car, but the DJ. Attack the pans and move fast with your hands. Up in the wild lands and walk across the burning sands. Can I have a little more sake in my cup? Yo, Honda, I'm kind of fond of these Japanese women. They treat me like a king and scream my name.